Larry, who's behind the assassination of the head of Hamas in Iran?
Well, I think Israel is. In fact, Israel's taking credit for it. Netanyahu's out telling, "Oh, we've dealt with the three H's: the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah." It's clear that the Israel coordinated this in advance with the United States and the United Kingdom, because there reports are coming out that of U.S. naval ships carrying U.S. Marines, a unit of U.S. Marines is headed towards Israel off the coast. They are there, can be in Israel and Lebanon to potentially evacuate U.S. citizens or citizens of other countries when a war breaks out. Well, they fully anticipate that a war is going to break out. Why? Because they've talked to, coordinated this all with Israel in advance. To carry out an assassination like this inside Tehran, it's still not clear how it was done. But it is an act of war. I'd say it's a violation of international law. Israel gets to be the only country in the world outside of the United States that it can attack any other country at once and be not held accountable. So it now bombs Beirut, bombs Lebanon, it bombs Syria, it bombs Iran, it bombs Iraq. Someone is, so you got to take the gun away from them. Israel's dangerous. Someone in the region has got to shut them down. But I fear the only way that's going to be done. I mean, what Israel has become is pure evil. They are as bad as the Nazis. They are raping male prisoners, Palestinians, using broomsticks, vegetables, and even themselves. Anal rape. They are, in fact, just the other day, some in the Israeli military, at least some, still have a conscience. And Golan apparently ordered military police to go arrest these prison guards, and they did. And it ended up being a big brawl. In fact, you had an open debate at one of the government sessions where some of the ministers that are connected to Ben-Gvir's element of the party are saying it's entirely justifiable to rape male and female prisoners. I mean, this is inhuman. And they claim that they've got an order from God to do this. If there is a God, they'll burn in hell for this, for what they're doing. But right now, the other countries in the region, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Iran, in a way, they're complicit. They're allowing this to go on. They're not doing what they could actually do to bring an end to this. And I keep talking about it. It's real simple. Shut down the oil that's flowing through Turkey. So if you've got a group that's backed by Iran, tell that group to go blow up that pipeline, blow it up, destroy it, shut it down. Of course, Turkey, Erdogan, could do it right now, today. And the beauty of that, of cutting the oil off from Israel, is it's going to deprive them of what they need to keep their war going. That war depends upon fuel and gasoline, or at least it forced them to severely cut back and curtail their operations. But nobody's doing it. And so, every day they're, killing dozens of Palestinian children and women. They just ex murdered two more journalists that work for Al Jazeera. I mean, the Zionists, they're a bunch of murderous thugs. They're criminals. They need to be stopped. Nobody's stopping it.
It seems that there were negotiations going on in Qatar between Hamas and Israel. Right now, Israel decides to assassinate the head of Hamas. And do you understand what's in their mind? Do they really want to negotiate? Do they really help? What's their plan for the future?
They don't want to negotiate. They're not interested in peace. They're not interested in any kind of solution that gives the Palestinians any kind of power or autonomy. The Zionists that are behind this, they want them all to die. They want the Palestinians to die. They don't care if they rape them. They don't care if they rob them. They don't care if they kill them. They don't care if it's an armed fighter or if it's a child, a 2-year-old, a toddler. They want them dead. And Israel sent a very clear message. They killed the guy that they're negotiating with. At this point, I think, Hamas has just got to step back and say, look, this can't be achieved through negotiation. Same with Hezbollah. The Chinese brought together 14 different Palestinian groups 2 weeks ago in an agreement that they would all work together. I can't believe sort of what I'm feeling now these days. I could never have believed that that time would come when I'd want to see the destruction of Israel. My own view is Israel should no longer exist as a nation. It should be wiped off the face of the earth. It's an abomination. It's wanton murder of others. It is just, in my view, evil. And they always try to project that it's Hezbollah and Hamas who are the terrorists doing all the killing. And I can show you the statistics compiled by the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs on its own website, details how many Israelis have been killed in these quote terrorist attacks. And like Hamas in particular is mentioned in only just a fraction of, less than 20%. So, and the total number of deaths for Israel over that 24-year period is less than 2,000 people. So we're not talking massive numbers. Whereas, since October 7th, the Israelis have, they're killing close to 50,000 Palestinians. Yeah, I mean, it's so disproportionate. It's really difficult to explain.
Yeah. Right after this attack, Antony Blinken said that they don't know, they didn't know anything about what
He's
has happened
lying.
today.
He's lying. I guarantee you he's lying. Otherwise, if we didn't know what was happening, why are we sending those ships over there to be prepared to do a non-combatant evacuation operation, a NEO? Huh? They're just happy coincidence? I don't believe in coincidence. And in fact, the other day we had the foreign minister, after the that supposed Hezbollah attack on the village, the Druze village in the Golan Heights. Yeah, the foreign minister Katz said, yeah, we got the blessing of the Europeans and the Americans to strike back. Well, that was pretty quick. They had that approval even before that attack took place in the Golan Heights. And whether that was a deliberate attack by Israel or if it was just an errant Iron Dome missile that fell there, or an errant Iron Dome missile that hit a Hezbollah missile and it fell into that area, that was not a Hezbollah attack. Hezbollah had no incentive. And in fact, Hezbollah has actually been going out of its way to try to avoid ramping this conflict up, but I don't know if that's going to be possible now with the additional murder of this Hezbollah commander on top of the murder of the head of the Politburo for Hamas. I think Israel is this thing. So we can, the problem is they get away with this so many times, and so they start thinking they're immune. They can impunity. We can do whatever we want. Nobody can stop us. Now look at what we're facing.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous that they were talking about these were Israeli children that were killed by Hezbollah, and everybody knows that that part doesn't belong to Israel. It's
Yeah,
a
they
Syrian.
were Syrian kids. I mean, they're citizens of Syria. They're Druze. They're not Jewish. And they were, but they conveniently became a prop for the Israelis as a pretext to expand this war.
Yeah. Do you think that was some sort of false flag operation on the part of the Israelis? That's why they have the motive to attack, to kill these commanders in Lebanon.
I personally I do. Can I prove that? No. But Israel, Israel is a genocidal society, and the people that support it are monsters, unfortunately. And it's important to note that this is not about Jews, because you have a number of honorable people, Jewish, who are speaking out, whether it's Max Blumenthal, Aaron Mate, Jeffrey Sachs, Norman Finkelstein. They're not a there's not a silent majority. They're speaking out, but the ruling authorities, the people that control the government, they're bloodthirsty, they're soulless, they violate every principle and tenet of what they claim is the religious foundation that they re rely upon. And everything they're doing is actually a rejection of that covenant with God.
It seems that Iran has sent a letter to the UN Security Council, and they're talking about a special military operation to respond to the attack on the Iranian soil. How do you find Iranian response if they go that direction?
Well, I'm not sure what they mean by a special military operation. Did you get any clarification? Did they literally say they're looking for permission of the United Nations to attack Israel?
No, just informing them that they're gonna do this, but they didn't talk about when they're gonna do this, what would be the nature of this operation.
I think we'll see something similar to what they did in April after the attack on the consulate, only this time it's going to be for real. This time, they're not going to coordinate with the United States in advance to put on a show. Because what they did in April was to try to demonstrate to Israel, hey, we can reach out and touch you too if you keep this up. And Israel just, they've bought into their own lies and own self-deceit, that they're so good, they're so powerful, and Iran's so weak. So I think you will see another massive drone onslaught initially to draw the Israeli fire, that will be followed by ballistic missiles that are going to be well targeted and will hit their targets and will cause significant damage to Israeli military facilities, possibly its nuclear facility in the south. I think Iran means business on this. And I expect out of that, Israel's going to try to retaliate, and so this thing's going to get out of control. It is. It's going to. I think it's going to ramp up. I don't see this being contained. I don't see the Iranians stepping back and saying, "Oh, let's just take a deep breath." And they came. This is, it's a little bit like the reaction of Al Pacino in Godfather 2, where they go into his house with my wife and children and try to kill him. I think that's how the Iranians are going to react, that you've come into our house and you've threatened our people in the very heart of our capital. You're not going to get away with this. It's not going to go unanswered. And the thing that's different is Iran has China and Russia in its corner.
Yeah, it's so amazing that Russia said that everything that Israel is doing, they're condemning everything that Israel is doing. They're not talking about just a single act on the part of Israelis, everything that they're doing.
No. The Israelis are beyond bullies. Like I said, they are behaving like the Nazi SS in World War II. The ones that rounded Jews up and put them into pits and shot them and put them into ovens and gassed them. The Israelis are behaving just like the Nazi SS. It's disgusting.
It's so amazing whenever they're talking about Iran and Hezbollah, they're talking about terrorists, terrorists. But at the end of the day, do we have any information that Iranian or Hezbollah was killing individuals, what was killing commanders of Israelis, assassinating them? It's
No.
always the opposite way. And why they're talking, what they're calling them terrorists, what when in fact Israel is doing everything that comes to that definition.
Yeah, it's all narrative. It's all been constructed. That I've written two different articles, and they're at Sonar 21. One on Iran's the record calling Iran a group of terrorists, a terrorist state. It is wrongly accused of being the most prolific sponsor of terrorism in the world. That title belongs to the United States, in my view. And then I wrote extensively about Hamas, just the facts. It's not my facts. And again, with respect to Iran, it's not my facts either. This is off of the terrorism data that's collected by the United States, by Israel, by other countries, and recorded. What are those terrorist attacks? And yet, throughout this claim of Iran, that what the biggest accusation against Iran was that Iran was supporting Shia groups during the U.S. invasion, illegal invasion of Iraq in 2003, and that it was helping insurgent groups fight against a U.S. occupation. Now, U.S. wants to call that terrorism, but you know what? We invaded a country illegally. And if somebody invaded us illegally, by God, we'd be out planting bombs and shooting and ambushing those who dared to invade us. But yet, when we do that to other people, we don't expect them to act like human beings. When they do, it's natural for human beings who've been invaded to fight the invader. And problem with the United States is we indulge ourselves in this ridiculous fantasy that we're the liberators, when in fact we're the invaders. But it doesn't matter whether it's Vietnam onward. We're the invaders. We're the outsiders. We're the ones interfering. We're the ones meddling in other people's elections and political affairs. I mean, I'm disgusted by what we've become in the United States, because we're not a force for good anymore. We're a force for evil.
We understand why the Biden administration is giving the green light to the Netanyahu administration to do that at the same time attacking Iran, Lebanon, and Syria. Recently, Bashar al-Assad was in Russia. And when you put all these pictures together, why would the Biden administration let Netanyahu to do that?
Well, here you go again, Nima. You're thinking rationally and logically and trying to make sense out of this. These people are not rational or logical. They are consumed both only with trying to win re-election and staying in power. And to that extent, if they calculate that supporting Israel in something that is this incredibly dangerous and stupid is a good thing to do, then they're all in favor of it. What the United States, you sort of get to the heart of the issue, that the Biden administration, Jake Sullivan, Tony Blinken, they could have told Netanyahu and say, "Look, okay, we hear your plan. That's what you're going to do. If you do that, not only will we not be sending ships to support you, we're going to cut off your economic aid and we're going to cut off your military aid. If you do this, you do this on your own. You're not dragging us into it." But they didn't do that. They just, "Hey, we got your back." Now, even that is a promise from whether it's the Biden or Trump or Obama or Bush administration. "Hey, we got your back, boy." That's like a threat. You got to, "Oh my God, please don't have my back." Because every time the United States gives that promise, they end up betraying it and pulling the rug out from under people. So, I said, this is the United States is not exercising control over this, unfortunately.
You've mentioned the role of Turkey and how important is that in terms of the conflict in Gaza. But How about Saudi Arabia and UAE? They were recently putting some sort of pressure on Houthis, if you remember, and how they can help the situation to bring Israel to some sort of sanity, in your opinion.
It's very simple. All the Arab Muslim countries in the region need to unite to cut off all economic ties with Israel, and direct or indirect, number one. Number two, support the Houthi blockade of the Red Sea, that nothing passes and goes to Israel until Israel withdraws from Gaza. Number three, most importantly, that Turkey cuts off the oil, stops supplying oil to Israel. Do that immediately. And sort of the beauty of that is it is nonviolent. It means that Israel can take this, they can take this step against Israel. They don't have to kill anybody. You don't have to bomb anybody. But it's going to essentially tie Israel's hands to be able to continue pressing the war forward. Then, under those circumstances, you can probably get people to sit down and talk, maybe have some rational talks, because Israel's back will be against the wall, because it will no longer have a military option that the one that it can sustain. But nobody's doing that. Like I said, Turkey's the one that really holds some significant cards in this, and they're still making worried about making money for Erdogan and his family and his corrupt friends. I probably shouldn't plan a trip to Turkey anytime soon, too, but.
Do you think that Iran and Hezbollah could manage this situation right now? Because the tensions right now are so high, and it can come to some sort of emotional decisions on the part of Iran and Hezbollah. But how we can understand the behavior of Iran and Hezbollah, how from what we've seen so far?
Well, Hezbollah is not going to give up. Let's start with Hamas. Hamas is not going to give up, and so they will remain a thorn in the Israeli side. But the people are going to be they're going to continue to die of disease, of starvation, as well as from bombs and bullets. That's okay with the Israelis. That's what they want. They want to exterminate these people. That's what folks need to get through their head. Hezbollah has been attacking Israel, but Israeli military targets with some consistency since, October 10th or 11th, going back that far. But they've avoided it to this point, escalating it and operating within their capability of launching strikes deep into Israel. That may change now. They may decide that, okay, now the time has come that they're going to have to up the ante on Israel and really try to hurt it. And if they do that in concert with Iran, then yeah, Israel's going to be faced with a real military problem, and may be tempted to try to use tactical nuclear weapons, which if they do, still it's going to kill a lot of people, particularly in Lebanon or maybe in Iran. But Iran very well could be in a position where it could fire back. Pakistan has already weighed in. Hey, our weapons are available for use by Turkey if necessary. So I mean, this thing is so incredibly dangerous. It'd be one thing if we could point to history and say, as long as we kill this person, the war stops. Hitler killed himself. That didn't stop the war immediately. Kept going. So this is not about just if we can only kill one person or kill a group of people, kill their leadership. No, well, in war, yeah, you want to kill leadership because it weakens the ability of the enemy. May make them more unpredictable or uncontrollable. But as far as it's got to be, if that's your only strategy, just killing, What is it you're trying to create? What is it you're trying to achieve? I mean, if I was an Israeli politician, my goal is to say, what can I do to secure peace so that nobody, none of these people are attacking my people, that we can live in relative peace and that we'll all get along and we won't be trying to kill each other. What do I need to do to achieve that? Well, what's going to have to happen in Israel is you're going to have to move out about 800,000 settlers from the West Bank that have illegally occupied Palestinian territory. Well, that's not going to happen. Those people are crazy. They're not, you can't deal with them rationally. When you listen to the likes of Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, they're representative of that crowd. They're dangerous. So it's just, I'm afraid that this is, you're going to fight this one out and a lot of blood's going to be shed. And the Israelis, for the first time in 70 years, they're going to experience terrible, terrible losses. Losses to the extent it may raise into question whether Israel can continue to exist as a nation.
Question is how the United States and together with the United Kingdom can help them if something big happens in that region.
Well, they've got limited ability. What are they going to do? Send troops? What troops? You got to land them someplace, then you got to feed them, got to support them, you got to be able to move them from point A to point B. Hell, the United States couldn't even construct a good dock off the coast of Gaza, a port, a floating port. That kept breaking up. So much for our, terrific engineering capabilities. We can launch airstrikes. Look how effective airstrikes have been in Yemen against the Houthis. That certainly has stopped them from firing those missiles, hasn't it? No, hasn't. And so, I mean, in the history of air warfare, the promise that air is going to bring a solution has never worked out. It's just one of those Air Force fantasies, myths. But they keep, man, they keep pushing it. Oh, just give us another chance. We'll bring an end to this. Okay. What I look forward to is if, one of the scenarios is if the United States gets engaged and starts bombing Hezbollah and Turkey decides to engage, Turkey doesn't have to worry about going into, passing through Syria into Lebanon. It could carry out attacks in Cyprus because you've got a Turkish side and a Greek side. And the Turks could launch attacks upon the Greek bases, which are basically RAF and US bases. They could also be a spot where massive drones could be launched at US aircraft carriers in the area. If you get a massive drone swarm that, you don't have to sink the ship. All you have to do is attack the deck. You attack the deck, cause damage to the deck. Those planes can't take off and land, and that aircraft carriers are now useless. So, I mean, there's a lot of permutations on this that none of them good, all dangerous.
And do you find any sort of reality and any sort of when it comes to Erdogan recently was talking about invading Israel. When he talks about this matter, in your opinion, he really mean it if something big happens, or he's just talking the talk?
He is a human hot air balloon, just a gas bag. Yeah, he's saying that for to get a political reaction out of people. The ability of Turkey to carry out that kind of move would be they would lose a lot of soldiers in the process. Israel, for all of its faults, would be able to conduct airstrikes on columns of trucks or ships trying to move Turkish soldiers to the south. So yeah, it's not going to happen.
Terry, the big question, in your opinion, if you were to answer this question, how can we make peace profitable for the region? What would be the answer to this question? Because it would benefit everybody.
Well, if you're trying to you're wanting to make it profitable, but it's just oh.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry. Yeah, so we had a little glitch there. Sorry about that.
No problem at
Can
all.
you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see a path to peace. There's going to be a, they're going to have to, the only path to peace is going to be on a bridge of bodies, a bloody pile of bodies. And it's not, it will include Israelis. It's only when they've reached a point of recognize that they, you can't kill your way out of this. The Israelis think that they can kill all these Palestinians and Arabs and Muslims and achieve peace. It's not going to happen. I actually think Trump was sort of on the right path trying, to negotiate the Abraham Accords, as they were called, at least to get the Saudis involved and to, use diplomatic measures to, try to get everybody to recognize Israel. This is where Barack Obama failed in the negotiations with Iran. If the negotiations with Iran to limit its nuclear arms program had included the demand, look, you need to recognize Israel's right to exist, and then, you'll be recognized as back into the real world and not going to be subject to sanctions. I think that's a negotiating position that could have worked. It would have, the United States would have stood firm on it, but we didn't. So we let them take that path. So that left one path to peace out because they were more interested in getting a quick agreement than to actually getting a working agreement. So that's, right now, I think we are, we're sitting on a pile of highly flammable material. We've just poured gasoline on it. Now you want to light up a cigarette. It's going to blow and it's going to burn. And, as we've seen repeatedly, people thought the Civil War in America would be over in a month. People thought the World War I would have been over within weeks. These things tend on to take a life on their own.
Larry, how did you find the situation in Venezuela? It's so much complicated. Elon Musk was getting involved, and unbelievable what he was doing and what he's doing right now.
It's one more example of U.S. meddling in a foreign election. We get all upset. Oh my God, the Russians are trying to meddle in our elections. How dare, stay the hell out. Yeah, we run around the world meddling in every other country, including Venezuela. Now, is Maduro some great Democrat? No. Do I think he's corrupt and power hungry? Yes. But that's a problem for Venezuelans to sort out. The problem is when the Venezuelans try to sort it out, they're relying upon foreigners who have other ulterior motives. The motive for the West is we want to get control of that Venezuelan oil. My God, can't have Maduro with control of that oil. Oh, he's not under our thumb. He aligns himself with those damn Iranians. Can't have that. So the United States is eager to try to promote a color revolution. And the puppet figure, have you seen the picture of the guy that they were claiming that he was the one put forward as the candidate for president? He looked like a miniature version of Joe Biden, just as confused and the blank stare on his face. And he looked like he'd been had all the testosterone sucked out of his body. And the woman, the power behind the throne, and they're trying to make a pretense that this is a democratic election, please, on either side. I give Maduro credit that if he stole the election, at least he stole it to the style of saying, I only won 51% of the vote. I mean, you know, the usual way for dictators is in our popular mythology is they win 85%, 90, 95%, you know, but he didn't do that. So this, you know, this is an example of Western meddling trying to interfere in the internal affairs of Venezuela. You know, and I just wish we'd all learn to mind our own damn business. That's naive. I know we can't do that. But the United States, with the hypocrisy on it, is just staggering. And we have to put on adult diapers, adult depends, undergarments, and as we soil ourselves over the very thought that Russia or China may be buying Facebook ads that are against one candidate or the other. Oh my God, that interference, we can't have that. Meanwhile, my old outfit, the CIA, is up to its ass and churning out propaganda and working then through other non-governmental organizations, National Endowment for the Democracy, and you know, God knows the long list of different front groups put up to be a channel to insert money, insert political opposition into situations like Venezuela. So let's, I mean, really, this is all about the oil. That's all this is about. Who controls the oil?
Do you think that the relationship between Kamala Harris and Zelensky is not that good that we thought it would be?
No, I don't think it matters. If Kamala Harris manages to win the presidency, I don't think there'll be a Ukraine left or a Ukraine worth funding. It'll be a moot point. The only thing may be Zelensky will want to stay in good terms with Kamala in the event that she becomes president, so that he can move to a place in Miami or Vero Beach, Florida, to live on the beach and not have to go back to nasty Ukraine.
Larry, which way do we have the risk of having a nuclear war right now when you compare Ukraine and right now in the Middle East? Which one is more important in terms of nuclear war?
Oh, Middle East, Israel, Iran. That's the bigger danger right now. But it's not to say that there's not also a potential danger with respect to Ukraine and Russia and NATO. I mean, the U.S. policy on this is just to be playing with fire. We saw there was a publication a couple of days ago. It's on the U.S. National Defense Strategy, I think. Did I pull it up here? No. But it was a study laying out what the United States needs to do to have a national defense strategy, I guess. And they say, hey, we'd need a bigger defense budget. And if we get into a war right now, we won't be able to fight it. But basically, we need to be able to be ready to fight Russia, China, and Iran all at once. I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely insane what they wrote. Oh yeah, here it is. It's the Commission on National Defense Strategy, done by RAND Corporation, the National Security Research Division, and it's quite a surprising document, just for the craziness that's reflected in it.
In your opinion, the case of Ukraine is going to die because right now in the United States, they're talking about that we're not capable of sending more aids and weapons to Ukraine.
Yeah, well, true. I mean, it's just the difference between talking and doing has been exposed with respect to the U.S. defense establishment as it's tried to support the war in Ukraine. So we want to provide unlimited support, but we don't have such a thing. All we have is limited support. Lockheed Martin only makes 550 Patriot missiles a year, even if Ukraine fires two Patriot missiles at every incoming target. And let's say Russia's firing just 10 missiles a day. And that means Ukraine's firing back 20 Patriot missiles to bring those down. Okay, just do the math. 20 per day, do that over a 30-day period. That's 600 missiles. That's more. If that you've used up more in 1 month than Lockheed Martin produces in an entire year. So, okay, Lockheed Martin can't keep pace. Same story with 155 millimeter shells. Same story with production of tanks, artillery pieces, drones. Ukraine's even fallen, Ukraine still has some ability to produce drones domestically, but the Russians have become better at targeting those facilities and destroying them. And the West is nowhere near capable of what Russia is in producing drones. So it's one thing to say, okay, yeah, we're going to back you to the end, but what does that mean? And we're going to send troops? No, we're not planning on sending troops. But even if we send troops, again, the issue is one of how do you mobilize them? Number one, how do you get them there? How do you sustain them once they're in the field? And what do you do when you start incurring 2,000 to 3,000 casualties a day of those troops? When in the history of the United States, going back to 1975, so basically we're looking at almost 50 years. In the last 50 years, the United States has not sustained more than 2,000 military casualties in any given year. In a year. I mean, total, you total up all the years in Iraq and all the years in Afghanistan, and I think the total casualties there were somewhere around 15,000 total, maybe killed in action were actually less than that. So the United States, it doesn't even have a barometer, no measure of comparison for what could unfold if we decide to get involved.
Yeah. In Ukraine, they're talking about that they're not going to resume the transit of Russian oil to Hungary and Slovakia. When it comes to the European Union, what does it mean, Larry? Turkey was waiting to be part of the European Union for so long. And what would be the benefit of being part of the European Union if they're not capable of putting some sort of pressure on Ukraine?
They'd be able to travel more freely to those countries and perhaps take up residence there and not stay in the hellhole and the shithole that Ukraine is now. I mean, look, this decision to cut off oil to Slovakia and Hungary, crazy from a standpoint of self-interest. Because Hungary and Slovakia both can turn around and say, okay, one, we're not sending you any more money. Two, oh yeah, that electricity we're sending you, we're selling you, we're going to cut that off too. So you're going to now no more electricity in Ukraine. And Ukraine's already facing, nobody's really paid attention to what it's like to go into winter with no electricity, no running water, no heat in an apartment building. I don't know, just out of curiosity, do you live in an apartment building or are you in like a house with a couple of floors?
Apartment building.
You're in an apartment building. Okay, so anybody that's lived in an apartment building that's like up above the 10th floor, you know what that's like when you have to, the elevator doesn't work and you've got to walk down 10 flights of stairs to get to your car or whatever, assuming you got gas. Then you got to walk back up those 10 flights of stairs. Good news is, after you do that for 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to be in great shape, probably. But if you're old or you got any kind of physical difficulties, you're going to be out of luck. And then how the hell do you get water pumped up to your bathroom? So you got to carry buckets of water up 10 flights of stairs. And if it's winter in Ukraine, those buckets are going to probably freeze. So you got to figure out how the hell do we melt the water, melt the ice to get water. So, I mean, this, in fact, this is a problem even if you're on the above the fourth floor. So All these people that dwell in these apartments, they're going to have to abandon those apartments, where they got to go somewhere. So that means the city life's going to, completely collapse in the wintertime. Because, and the other problem they're running into right now is they don't even have enough power to keep refrigerated items going in grocery stores. So, milk, cheese, eggs, that stuff that's perishable. That's not showing up anymore. You'd actually probably have to go to a butcher, just buy it direct as he chops it off the cow and cook it immediately without a dry it, dry it out and see if he can preserve it that way. So, I mean, these just the practicalities of living are going to add to the complexity of the dire strategic situation confronting Ukraine.
Yeah. Just to wrap up this session, Larry, is the situation that you just mentioned bringing Zelensky to some sort of sanity to go after negotiations?
Not really. I think they're looking to buy time because they still convince themselves, oh boy, if we just get enough time, we can beat those Russians. They're very much like the degenerate gambler who's lost all of his money at the casino playing blackjack, and he's out looking just for another loan, somebody else to loan him. Man, just give me $100,000. I'm gonna go in there. I'm gonna kick their ass. We're gonna win this. And then, 3 hours later, where's that $100,000? Oh, the casino's got it. So, that's where Zelensky is at this point.
Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
All right. Thanks for hosting me. Appreciate it.